Good morning, Marcia.
Good morning, CJ. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning.
So today, I want to talk about talking again.
Talking about talking.
I'd like to talk about conversation. You know, this week, on a personal level, on work level, and on a national level, I've been watching conversations not so skillfully done. Is that a...
Yeah, that's a nice way
judicious?
Of putting it.
Yeah, and I know this is true for me. I can be really lousy at conversations. And I know it's true of many, many people with the best of intention. I found a Yogi Berra quote. It was impossible to get a conversation going. Everyone was talking too much. I thought, yeah. So how do we... get a little bit more skillful, because I truly believe that conversations are the lifeblood of a relationship, of a family, of a workplace, of a community.
A society.
Society. And yeah. So if we can keep working and cultivating in ourselves the ability to communicate, to converse a little bit more effectively. And so just a distinction, for example, between discussion, which has its roots in the same words as concussion and percussion, you know, where you hammer against each other or do a tandem dialogue, a monologue. Like, I'll monologue at you, and then you monologue at me, and then I'll monologue at you. Mm-hmm. And nothing changes.
Right.
As opposed to how do we get a little bit more able to do dialogue? And this is just, again, even in my family, you know, where, you know, we sometimes talk past each other or sometimes talk at each other. And how do we get to a place where dialogue... where the meaning passes through, the meaning passes between. So it's not just hammering on each other.
It seems like the key there is that the person whose turn it is to listen has to be open.
Well, that is. I mean, at the foundational level, there's what's the intention? What do we care about? What's the higher order objective here? What's the most difficult challenge we've got that if dealt with would change everything? If we can both stay focused with the eye on the prize, and it's really hard to listen. I know when someone says something really different than what I believe, I'm not terribly skillful at that. I have to have some kind of agreement or someone sort of, you know, helping me keep my mouth shut. But one thing that really does help me is if they share their story. So if people share an abstract idea, like, you know, here's what we got to do. Mm. And I don't understand why they came to that conclusion. What is it about their story? What have they seen? What have they experienced in their life that led them to that? Because this is what discussion and then the hammering comes from, is when we're both saying, it's got to be this way. No, it's got to be this way. No, it's got to be this way. And I don't ever understand, what led you to that? What in your life experience? What do you see that I don't see? If you go back to the old Sufi tale with the blind men and the elephant, mm-hmm. You know, they're each holding a different part of the elephant, and we could be arguing that an elephant is like an ear, like a rug. Someone's saying, it is not you. What kind of idiot are you? The elephant is like a tree. I can't believe you. That's stupid. Well, obviously, we're not going to fully understand what the elephant is if we discuss it versus if we have a dialogue about it. So why, you know what, tell me why you think the elephant's like a rug. Help me understand. Mm-hmm. What is your experience with that? What's the story with that? Because when we can do that, and I've referenced this before, like in South Africa or in Guatemala, where they've come through really difficult times, and one of the ways they found they were able to move through and come to a shared vision and a common purpose was that they listened to each other's stories. Now, what happened that led you to believe that this is the way it needs to go? No, and that's at a high level, but it's also at the micro level. You know, it's not uncommon in my house or with a colleague for someone to ask a question and the other one come back. Like, this is a work situation this week where a colleague asked, did you do that project? And the response is, what, you think I'm an idiot? Of course I did that project. Don't you trust me? You know, I was like, whoa. So, you know, the thing that really kind of hangs us up a lot of the times is we are great meaning-making devices. Our brains can make sense of things without any information, you know, based on our past experience.
Fill in the blank?
Yeah. And so until we can take the time to kind of to share, well, this is why I've made sense of it the way I made sense of it. So, for example, the colleague that asked the other colleague, you know, did you do that project yet? Well, if they had shared by the way, somebody came into my office and asked me about that project, and I felt really stupid that I couldn't answer. And I knew you were working on it, so I thought if I came and found out a little bit more about it, I wouldn't feel so stupid next time someone asked me. Have they given that context, the reflexive response of, what do you think, I'm stupid? May not have come out because mm-hmm. it would have exposed. So the more we can consciously not just talk about our conclusion, but back it up a little bit. It's like, well, what is it? What was the data? What was my experience that led me to lead to this kind of conclusion? There was a great method created called the focused conversation method. And the way they created this method, it was created 40 years ago, was they watched groups that were really effective at getting the important work done. And they found that what they did differently was they were a bit more disciplined, not just talking conclusion, but they would go to, what was the data? What was the data that you were paying attention to? And how did you feel about that data? And how did it relate to your past experience? And what meaning did you give to that data? And, you know, they did more of a storyful conversation and held off on conclusion, like what we should do, until they really heard everybody. And then they could come to a more robust conclusion about how to deal with it. So it's a lot, again, I've said this before, there are a lot of books that talk about it, but as you alluded to, CJ, at the beginning, the first thing is we need to want to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. We want to understand, and it, sometimes I am a kind of a Pollyanna. I understand this, and I do try to think positively, and I do have a lot of hope for humankind. But it's not just a nice thing to do. If we can't have conversations, we can't be our best selves, we can't do the work that needs to be done.
Yep.
And so the more we can look to ourselves individually, it's like, how can I be a little bit more open about why I've made sense with things, share my story, and open up to others so that I'm willing to be changed and learn and grow as a part of the conversation. I love quotes, and I found this in this book called Crucial Conversations, which I have loved for years. This is right at the first quote at the beginning of the book. The void created by the failure to communicate is soon filled with poison, drivel, and misrepresentation, by C. Northcote Parkinson.
And we've all watched that happen.
Yeah,
our own selves, in our community, nationally, watched it over and over.
Exactly. And instead of responding by judging how others should be, the question is, how can I this week be a little bit more open and willing to listen and to share? And not just have these concussion discussions.
I like that, discussion concussions, and vice versa.
Indeed.
Thank you, Marcia.
Thank you, CJ.